postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and on today's Friday Birthful Story, I'll be talking with Vanessa Janik about her recent home birth. A former labor and delivery nurse, current childbirth educator, and self-declared birth junkie, Vanessa thought she knew what to expect from birth. Going into it, she was a bit leery of transition, but nothing could really prepare her for the exhaustion, fear, and overwhelm she felt when contractions went away, just after she got to 10 centimeters. How did she get past those feelings to push her baby out? Stay tuned. The Birthful Podcast, talking to new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you so much for all the love you give the show. And if you like what you hear, you know what to do. Subscribe so you don't miss a thing. All right. So Vanessa Janik is here to share her home birth story today. And we're going to take a deep dive into how it really brought her to her edge, taking her through every imaginable emotion as birth has a way of doing. Vanessa, welcome to the show. I am so happy you're here today to share your story.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Ah, very exciting. And so, you know, you reach out wanting to share, and I really love that you had a unique perspective because you used to be a labor and delivery nurse and a childbirth educator. So tons of birth knowledge and experience. And how did that, you know, go ahead and tell us a little bit more about yourself and how that colored your view of how you were going into birth and preparing.
Sure. So I did used to be a labor and delivery nurse for a very brief time. It was actually my first job out of nursing school, and it was my dream job, or so I thought. And I got in there, and it just became really clear to me. I became very unsettled by a lot of the interventions that I was witnessing and that I was ultimately going to be responsible for, that I just wasn't comfortable with. As we all know, listeners to the show, labor is sometimes really heavily managed when it doesn't necessarily need to be, and it's not medically necessary in a hospital setting, depending on the hospital and the provider, of course. But where I was, I just started becoming really uncomfortable with what I saw going on around me. And so ultimately, I kind of decided to stop and actually ultimately left nursing. Partially because of the experience I had had, but I still really wanted to be involved in birth. And so that's when I started my training as a childbirth educator, which really just solidified, you know, all the feelings that I had been having. And it was just so nice to be in a community of like-minded people who really saw birth the same way I did, especially low-risk birth, low-risk pregnancy, rather, you know, that it doesn't need to be so heavily managed if the woman doesn't want it to be. And if things are, you know, progressing along with a competent provider in a way that suggests that interventions aren't entirely necessary. And, you know, there are benefits and risks to all sorts of interventions, and it's just so important to be informed. And I always found in the hospital that a lot of times it didn't seem like laboring moms and families really were as informed as they could be. And so it was great to be in the cohort I was in when I was getting my childbirth educator certification, because it just really, it was validating from my perspective. And it was great. And so I'm not teaching at this time because I have a very little one, but I hope to be in the future, and I hope to bring, you know, my various perspectives to bear when I do start teaching. So that's sort of where I came from. And so you're right, I had, you know, this cornucopia of knowledge about birth, but having not gone through it firsthand, it was all going to be very new to me. And I was trying to stay in that beginner's mindset going into it.
And I've got to say, I have a very special place in my heart for labor and delivery nurses, because I know that you have to juggle so much. And Yes. It's that it's like having to figure out almost conflicting forces coming at you.
Definitely.
And how to navigate it all. So I love labor and delivery nurses and really enjoy getting to know them and work with them and understand. We're all people. We, you know, like you said, labor and delivery nurses, usually if they're there is because they love birth.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they wanted to manage it and do interventions.
Right. You want to be there to support moms, but it's so hard sometimes, and there's so many demands on your time, and a lot of, prescriptions come from above you. And so you can only do so much in the end.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So yay, shout out to labor and delivery nurses.
Yay.
I love you. And also, so wait, you said very little one. Tell us, how old is your little one?
So she is about 9.5 months old now.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. Your first birth.
My first birth, yes.
Okay. So did you do, aside from like all that experience you had with labor and delivery and doing you did your childbirth education certification before she was born, right?
Yes. Okay. I did that a few years ago. But I did take a class because, again, I kind of wanted to like forget everything I knew and just be in my own pregnancy and in my own birth as much as I could, and not be too much up in my head about, you know, everything that could go wrong or everything that, you know, should slash does happen a certain way, which, as we all know, every birth is so different. So I didn't want those past experiences to color it too much, which is really difficult, but I tried. So I took a class, which was amazing. It was really heavily based on the book Mindful Birthing, which is a fantastic book and resource for anybody who's looking for that sort of preparation. And there was a lot of, you know, breath work and meditation work and experiential stuff. We did the thing with the pot of ice water where you stick your hands in for the length of a contraction and all that fun stuff. So it was great. It was really great. We did a lot of movement. You know, it wasn't just sitting in front of a projector looking at stages and phases of labor. So I did find it helpful.
Was the class named anything specific, or it was just based on the book?
I don't recall what the actual name of the class was. I don't think it's advertised as being based on that book, but in the conversation I had with the educator prior to going, she had mentioned that was one of her primary resources. And so I should look it up if I desired before the class.
Got it. So physically, did you do anything to prepare?
Physically, what do you mean by physically?
So any, like, were you exercising in a specific way? Anything that you added or took away? Or did you do any body work?
I did a lot of walking. I at the very end of my pregnancy, I started doing some of the spinning babies poses because I was becoming very, very pregnant, and approaching and then surpassing my quote unquote due date. I wanted to make sure that everything was as aligned as possible. And something else I did actually the day before I went into labor, and then the day I did go into labor, I went and I got acupuncture, which I wish I had been doing all throughout my pregnancy because it was really, really helpful.
And how was it helpful?
It was helpful because it helped me to relax. And, the person who was doing my acupuncture was just, you know, she was a great listener. And she was really empathetic toward the fact that I was so pregnant and so, you know, ready to have this baby. And so just having, you know, one more person to be sort of in your court and, you know, helping to try and move things along in whatever way they can safely at the end of pregnancy was just great.
Yeah. And did you find that it would also like took away a little bit of stress of like, what can I do to, like,
yes,
just having something to do?
Oh, definitely. And I had tried to push off doing any kind of, even quote unquote natural induction until, you know, the 41st week or 42nd week, I guess, rather, after I turned 41 weeks. Because, you know, any induction is an induction, even if it's, you know, not medical. And so I tried to push it off as long as I could. But finally, I just thought, you know what? I've heard great things about acupuncture. I'm going to go try this because, you know, I really want to get things going. And I think in the end, it really did work.
And, you know, if we look at research, that for first time moms, especially, the average of when they give birth is closer to 41 weeks. I think it is 40 weeks and 6 days. And so half of them give birth before that and half of them give birth after that.
Right, right. But there's still, you know, and of course I knew that. And I was anticipating going, you know, past 41 weeks, the entire length of my pregnancy. Anytime somebody would say, oh, when's your due date? I'd say, oh, it's this date, but I'm sure I'll be late. And so I knew that, but it's so hard when there's pressure because I was planning a home birth and my midwives were not allowed to attend me at home if I went past 42 weeks. And so there was that added pressure, even though, you know that all of this is perfectly normal and okay and baby's healthy and she's still moving and everything's great. It's still that additional pressure of, you know, what's going to happen in the end and am I going to get the experience that I'm hoping for?
Right. There was a clock, ticking.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So how did labor start? How did you know it was it?
Well, the short answer is I didn't. because I had actually been having, I guess I'd call it prodromal stuff since about 38 weeks. And so I would get contractions usually in the evening. But they'd be really close together. They wouldn't be very strong, but they would be like, you know, every 2 to 5 minutes. And so, of course, when this first started happening at, you know, 38, 39 weeks, I kept thinking, oh, maybe this is it. Oh, maybe this is it. But by the time I was, you know, 41 weeks and 3 days, I just thought, oh, this again, goody. I'm setting myself up for, you know, a night of dashed hopes. You know, I kept hoping I'd go into labor, but it never panned out. And so by this point, it was a Thursday night, and I had had acupuncture that morning, and I'd been doing a lot of, my midwife suggested that I do a lot of, they called it Beyonce booty shaking. And so I'd put on, you know, a YouTube channel and just dance around and move my hips and do all this stuff and do lunges and stairs and, you know, everything that I could think of. And so I'm doing all of this, and the contractions have started, and I'm not convinced that they're real, but I figured, well, you know, I had actually been awake since about 3 a.m. that day. This was a Thursday, and I just couldn't sleep because at the end of pregnancy, insomnia is a thing. And so I had been up all day, and I was really tired, but I thought, well, you know, I'm really trying to avoid this whole 42 week thing. So let me see if this turns into anything. Let me try and be extra active and, you know, do my booty shaking and do my lunges and do my stairs. And, my husband was there, and he was really, really tired. And so my contractions had started around 6. He was helping me time them, and it was the same sort of pattern of them being really close together, but just not very strong. And so finally, you know, I said, why don't you go to bed? You know, I'll take over from here. I'm sure it will be nothing. And so he goes to bed, and it was just me and our cat. And I had, you know, white twinkle lights up, and I kind of kept looking at them and petting the cat and trying to get all the oxytocin going and bouncing on a big exercise ball. And I was doing some nipple stimulation, and I was just trying to get into a really good groove of just like, just a big oxytocin fest. And things started to pick up just a little, which was new. I remember I was on hands and knees and kind of rocking back and forth for a contraction, and it kind of hit this, there was an edge to it that hadn't been there previously. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm going to be mad if this isn't real, because this feels different. And so things kind of kept going like that. And, eventually I started vocalizing, and I started, you know, I put my hands on the mantle and was kind of swaying back and forth, and my husband's sleeping through this whole thing. And so I had Netflix going. I remember I watched a couple of movie musicals. I really wanted to watch movie musicals, and, I just kept moving and I kept vocalizing, and that was getting, you know, a little louder. And so finally it was probably around midnight, and I thought I should try to sleep. Because again, I've been up since 3 this morning. So let me go try and lay down. And I tried to lay down, and that didn't work. And at that point, my husband was like, okay, so is this real? Are we saying you're in labor? And I was like, I don't know. You know, this could still be just prodromal stuff. This might not be real. And he finally looked me in the eye, and he was like, Vanessa, you have been going all night long. At what point do we decide this is real? And so I think finally I was like, okay, this is probably labor.
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second before you go on. Because we have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using Aqua True water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my Aqua True. Aqua True also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any Aqua True purifier. Just go to aquatru.com, that's AQUATRU.com, and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any Aqua True water purifier when you go to aquatru.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL.
And we're back. So, Vanessa, it's been kind of decided, finally hinted, accepted that you are in labor.
Yes, finally. Yeah. I was so happy when I finally admitted to myself that I was in labor. I was just so grateful and so happy that this was actually happening.
Mm. And so, yeah, what happened next?
So I couldn't sleep. And so I just stayed up the rest of the night. And at a certain point, you know, John got up with me and he was, you know, supporting me and doing some counter pressure where he could. And I alerted my doula and I alerted the midwives so that they knew what was going on. And, you know, they said, oh, well, you know, just keep us posted. And I said, okay, you know, I've got this. I can handle this for now. And I want to say it was probably around 7. Oh, no, the part of the story that I always forget when I'm telling it, we had this huge storm. It was literally, it wasn't in the forecast. It was just over our house, just this big thunderstorm. It was April, and we lost power, and nobody else in any other town had this storm or lost power or anything. It was the wildest thing. And so, you know, I just kind of chalked it up to my daughter's strength.
There was something serious happening there that
night.
Yeah,
there was something real, yes. Very serious. And so that happened really quickly. And so we lost power, which wasn't great because we had rented a birth tub from my doula. And of course we had to fill it and we needed hot water to fill it. And so my husband, like, he had bought a generator and he had never used it. We had never lost power in this house. We had never used a generator. This was the first time for all of this. And I am, you know, in labor, probably tending toward active labor at this point. And so he's running around trying to get heat and I'm laboring in the doorway. And so it was around 7 in the morning and I finally called the midwives. I had a couple contractions where I was like, okay, we should probably bring some people in because I had never been in labor before. And so I didn't know how close I was. I didn't think I was close, but what if things went quickly, you know? And everybody was about an hour or more away from my house. So I thought I should give them the heads up. So everybody showed up and things kind of slowed down at that point, as I probably should have known that they would.
Totally normal. People in your space, yeah.
Yeah. And so they kind of all cleared out and they, you know, went to their own room while John and I continued doing what we had been doing. And, you know, I was still vocalizing really loudly, which was what I needed to do. But the midwife who was on call, she wasn't the midwife who I had been working with primarily, although she would arrive later. The midwife who was on call who came, finally, she kind of came over to me and she had this pep talk and she was like, look, you've been up now for over 24 hours. You have to stop fighting these contractions the way that you are and let them do their thing because you're never going to have enough strength to birth this baby if you keep fighting them the way that you're doing. And so she said, you need to go upstairs and you need to get in the shower with your husband and do not come out until you can make it through your contractions by relaxing into them and not making a sound. She was like, no nonsense. And so I said, yes, ma'am.
How did that make you feel, though?
I thought she was crazy. I thought, I am, you know, vocalizing is working for me. Like, this is never going to happen. The sensations were so different from what I thought. It wasn't crampy at all. It was like the stretching sensation, you know, down below in places that I wasn't expecting. And it was really, it was intense. I mean, I felt like I was coping fine. But I thought, you know, she's been doing this for a long time. She knows what she's talking about and it's worth a shot. And of course, you know, the shower is a great place to be when you're laboring. And so what could go wrong here? You know, this will be good either way. And so we went upstairs and somehow it worked. I don't know how, but I was able to sort of get to a place where I could just relax into the contractions and just let them do their thing. And I actually, after that shower, I actually kind of took a nap in between contractions, which I did not think that I was going to be able to do. And so that was just really wonderful and sweet. And my husband was doing counter pressure while I, you know, was kind of laying on top of him napping, and, you know, everybody was trying to, you know, give me little sips of things here and there and encouraging me to drink and to eat some. And it was just a really sweet time, in labor. And, after that, there was, you know, I labored outside for a while, labored on the toilet for a while, which was super intense. I think as anybody who's ever labored on a toilet will attest, it is really intense. but it helped things along, I think. And then I remember coming back and sitting on our living room chair and, you know, eating a popsicle. And, you know, it was so interesting to me because it was like I'd have a contraction and I'd be so immersed in how intense the contraction was. But then when it was over, it was over. And you read about this and you hear about this from people who have, you know, physiologic unmedicated birth, that this is what it's like in between contractions, you know, at least before transition. But it was just so interesting to be in that. And it was like there were, you know, two versions of me, one that was in labor and then one that would take over and was just feeling fine. And so I remember, you know, sitting on this chair and eating a popsicle and kind of talking to people in between contractions like it was totally normal. And then at some point that kind of started to go away and everything started to get a little more hazy. And, you know, I should have known it was transition, but I didn't. I thought that, you know, things were sailing along, but I thought I still had a really long time to go. And I had been, at this point, I had been in labor for about 20 hours, and I thought I was nowhere near the finish line, and I was totally fine with that. I was like, I haven't been in labor long enough. Like, this is fine. This is going great.
It's so funny how time just warps.
Yes, it warps so much. But I also felt like I was coping really well. And, you know, I anticipated once transition hit, I wouldn't be coping well at all, and I would need a lot of support. But I was doing okay. And so when my doula said, hey, do you want to get in the tub? I was nervous that it was too early and that I would slow things down if I got in the tub. And so I said, oh, like, you don't think it's too soon? And she said, no, I think you could get in the tub now. And so I did. And I just couldn't get comfortable. And it wasn't as pleasant as I wanted it to be. And then at some point I threw up and then I started, you know, shaking and I started sobbing, but like my thinking brain was really confused by all this because I was thinking, I'm coping, I'm fine. What, you know, this happens during transition, but I couldn't possibly be in transition because I'm doing fine. And of course the writing's on the wall, like I was in transition. And I wouldn't let, at this point, up to this point, I hadn't let the midwives check me because I didn't want to know. I didn't want to be discouraged. And finally, I let my midwife check me, and I was 10.
And the contraction.
Yeah, well, it was yay, but it was also, I couldn't believe it. I was like, how? How am I 10? You know, this process, I'm not going to say it was easy. It wasn't easy, but it was just, it was much more, I don't know. I coped a lot better than I thought that I was going to. Mm-hmm. I never had that moment of, oh my God, I can't do it. But that was still to come. So I was 10 and the contractions stopped. And if anybody has listened to, is it Wapio who did the Holistic Stages of Birth with you?
Yes.
A while back, that rest and be thankful phase that comes, you know, sometimes after you hit 10. I think that's what happened. But I couldn't rest and be thankful. I suddenly didn't know what to do because, okay, I was complete. There were no more contractions. And I think in retrospect, I was so tired because I had been awake for so long with just that tiny little like half nap in between contractions that I hit a wall. And you know, they said, okay, well, you know, you can push whenever you're ready. And I was like, what do you, I have no urge to push. I don't know how you push. Pushing means that I'm actually going to have this baby. And what does that mean? And my relationship is going to change. And this is scary. And there's going to be a ring of fire. And I actually have to get her down there and like push her out of me. And it just became so overwhelming. And I got just so disheartened. That was my moment of like, I can't do this. And I think mostly, you know, it was the tiredness, but it was also that I didn't have the urge to push and I thought I would. I had in all my preparation for labor and, you know, even all the experience that I had had prior in other people's labors, it just, for some reason, pushing was just like my kryptonite. Like it was hard.
Mm.
So, finally,
were you able to rest then? Did you get to a place where you could just let things be or what happened?
You know, I should have. I wish I had, but I was so freaked out and just sad and tired. I can't explain it. It was just really hard. It was just really intense and really difficult. I totally should have just relaxed and like waited for the urge to push, but I think I was just so tired and overwhelmed that I couldn't let myself. I wanted to be doing something, but I didn't know how to do it because my body wasn't telling me. And in all honesty, I probably just wasn't ready. But, you know, contractions eventually kind of returned here and there, and I would try and push, but nothing would really happen. And finally, they suggested getting out of the water because I just didn't want to be in the water anymore. I wasn't comfortable. And I was like, that means I have to stand up. How am I going to do that? And so they helped me to get out of the water and we tried different positions. And I remember I did more contractions on the toilet and that's where my water broke. And there were a couple of other different positions that they had me in. And I was actually, toward the end of pushing, I was actually on the floor and, you know, lying down, which I knew, you know, if anybody were to tell you about the benefits of using gravity when you push and how great it is, it would have been me, but I was just so tired.
So tired.
And yep. And so hungry probably and thirsty and, you know, nothing was staying down. And so it was just rough going. And so finally it had been about 2.5 hours of pushing. And I definitely had that thought when I was pushing of like, you know, the entire time I was in labor, I never thought, ooh, get me to the hospital. Ooh, I want drugs. You know, that thought never crossed my mind that I wanted to be anywhere other than where I was. But at that point, I was like, I wish I had a vacuum or like forceps or somebody just get this baby out of me. I can't do it. Which I didn't vocalize. But it was just that feeling of like, it was just desperation, you know, at that point. And it had been so long. And so finally, they kind of set up, my midwife kind of set up like a makeshift birth stool, this little, you know, tiny stepladder with a meditation cushion on top of it. And my husband supported me from behind. And so I was kind of squatting. And they set up a mirror. And, you know, having been a nurse, these are all things that I would have suggested to laboring women. And being on the other side of it, I just wanted no part of it. Like, you know, it got to the point where they could see hair and they were like, Vanessa, look, you can see her hair. And I just didn't want to hear about it because she was still so far up. You know, she wasn't even close to crowning yet. And so it was just, looking back, it's comical.
You know,
because it's all the right things that you're supposed to do, but I just wasn't feeling it in the moment.
But maybe they're not the right things.
Right.
You know, let's explore that. Like maybe they're not the right things because at that point, what you need more than anything is to support that oxytocin. And that's not a thinking brain. So, you know, look at in the mirror, that's a thinking brain. You mm-hmm. know, talking to you, that's thinking brain. You know?
Yeah, you're so right. And it was funny because at the same time, I was facing the front of our house where there are two windows and the windows have shutters on them. And all of a sudden, as I am in these last stages of pushing and just about ready to crash, we heard this kind of chirping noise. And everybody was just obsessing about the chirping noise. And we figured out, oh, it's probably a tree frog. I say we figured out, but of course I wasn't part of this conversation. I was just there, you know, trying to push my baby out. And everybody was talking about the tree frog and right. how funny it sounded. And, oh, it must be on the other side of the shutter because it sounds like it's in the room and all this stuff. And I was like, hello, like I am going to spend the rest of my days lying here because this baby's never coming out. What are we talking about? I was so mad at the tree frog. And again, it's that thinking brain. It was sort of like pulling me out of probably where I needed to be, just sort of in the moment. But looking back, it's really funny. And, you know, my husband and I always joke about the tree frog that sort of witnessed Isla's birth. But anyway, so...
Wait, hold on. I know the baby's coming, but we have to take a break.
Okay.
Okay.
Diaper rash. It can be a truly uncomfortable experience for a baby. And so I find that one of the biggest conundrums when diapering is figuring out what diaper cream to use. So many options are thick and goopy, making them hard to apply and hard to wipe off. But I can personally say that this is not the case for Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant that is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, designed as a breathable formula to help maintain an optimal skin barrier while allowing the healing to occur. This butt balm was developed by a mom who is also a doctor, hence the name Dr. Mom Butt Balm, when she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, and she wasn't about to settle. So she created Dr. Mom Butt Balm to go on smooth and be easy to remove while also being gentle on your baby's delicate skin. With Dr. Mom Butt Balm, you can say goodbye to excessive wiping to clean your little one's already chafed skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is so soft and goes on so smooth that you'll only need a small amount instead of having to layer on a thick goop. Plus, it has a lovely minty scent. Learn more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com. That's drmombuttbalm.com. Or look for it at Amazon.com.
Back to it. Like, I did the whole thing. Like, I was just the tree frog interrupting. I'm so sorry. No, I was just the tree frog interrupting.
I made my peace with it. It's okay.
So what happened?
So, okay. So at this point, she's crowning. And my midwife is listening to her heart rate with the Doppler. And so I can hear it. And she had done so great. My daughter had done so great, you know, up to this point, tolerating this lung pushing stage. And at some point, she was listening to her heartbeat and it slowed way down. You know, typical fetal heart tones are like, da 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 da, and this was like da 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 da. And having been a nurse, I knew, I knew. And to her ever loving credit, my midwife is so calm. She just said, "Okay, Vanessa, she's got to come with your next round of surges." And I have to read you a piece of my birth story that I wrote here because I don't know how else to describe it. I wrote, finally, after almost 3 hours of pushing, she crowned. At one point, her heart rate dropped, and the midwives told me that she needed to come with my next round of surges. I don't even know if there was a contraction to be had, but at that moment, I bore down with every last ounce of strength I could muster, plus some more that I couldn't have dreamed that I had hidden away. There was actually no ring of fire, at least not one that I could detect. All that existed in those moments was pure brute will. Time was suspended, and nothing in the world mattered but bringing this baby earthside. And I still get a little emotional when I read that and remember this moment because it was for a few reasons. I think, you know, throughout my my pregnancy and this labor, I really tried to connect with this baby, but I couldn't, for whatever reason. And I think, you know, partially because she was my first and I didn't know what it would be like to have a child. And so I did the best I could connecting with her. But I mean, especially through labor, I really felt like I was on my own. And hearing her heart rate and knowing she needed to come and just doing what had to be done, it was like there was no space for fear. It was just, I was, you know, time stopped and it was like I was just consumed by this love for my daughter and I pushed her out. And even though every piece of me said I couldn't, I did it. And it was like that moment was when I really realized that she was mine, you know, and that I was her mom. And it was just this incredible, powerful moment of when I first became a mother. And I think it was also, you know, I tend to be kind of an anxious person. If there is a worry to be had, I will have it typically. And it was sort of, it was just this moment of pure fearlessness that I've never experienced in my life where like there are no thoughts in my head. It's just pure love and there's just nothing else. It was this amazing moment and she was born and my husband and I both got to lift her up to my chest as she was born. And that was it. And she sort of gave a little gurgle. She was really mucousy. And then she was on my chest and yeah. And we were parents and it was just this amazing moment. Yeah, it was beautiful.
That does sound incredible. That sound, you know, like if we look at it, like if we were looking at this with a watch, that all that you've recounted from the moment they said she needs to come in the next, you know, with the next surges to when she was up on your chest, that couldn't have been very long.
No, it was probably a minute. I couldn't tell you. We've talked about how time just kind of goes by the wayside. It was, but it felt eternal, but it also felt so short.
Right. But like, look at everything that was packed and captured in that instant that you just described. Like the universe.
That is the only way to describe it, Adriana. Thank you. It was the universe. Yes. Yeah.
It's so crazy what birth can do. My goodness.
It's so crazy. And meeting her was just wild because I had this vision in my head, kind of this vague vision of what she would look like. And it was something, you know, newborns that aren't yours and that aren't, you know, a close family or friends have this just generic newborn look. They look like newborns. Maybe that's just me, but to me, they just look like newborns when you don't know them. And so I just kind of had this picture in my head that she would just look like a newborn. And as I picked her up and saw her face and saw what she looked like, it was really truly meeting somebody in a way that I hadn't anticipated. And I sort of liken it to like meeting a radio personality who, you know, you've heard them and you feel like you know them to a certain extent. And then you see them in person or you see a picture and you're like, oh, that's who you are. It was interesting because I carried her for so long. And so I felt like I knew her, but then I truly met her and she was different than I expected, but she was perfect. And it was, so much in just one moment. It was just so much. And that's what, you know, I think so many people hope for in their birth. And I just felt so grateful that, especially for my first birth, that I got this home birth and I got, really no complications and, yeah, I feel really lucky. It was wonderful.
Yeah. What time did she end up being born at?
She was born at 5:40 p.m. And so I had been in labor since about 6 the night before.
So a full almost 24 hours.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, given that I someday want to start teaching childbirth classes, I had joked throughout my pregnancy that I really wanted the textbook birth, you know, first birth, like 20 to 24 hours, you know, each stage is X number of hours long and, you know, probably go to a little over 41 weeks because that's typical of a first time birth. And I really, you know, I got all that for better or for worse. It was pretty textbook. Even the pushing stage was, you know, it was a little long, but for a first time mama, you know, not outside of the range of what's normal.
Yeah, no. And I'm glad you brought up, you mentioned the pushing stage again, because when you were talking about it, I didn't want to interrupt. But you mentioned Wapio, and I did a whole other podcast episode with her on rethinking the pushing stage.
You did. And I wish that I had heard that before my birth. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, because
it's so good.
Yeah. Did you hear it afterwards?
I did. Okay. I did. Just maybe a month or two ago, I listened to it and it was amazing. I thought, this is what I needed. So, you know, listeners, go listen to that. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Cliff Notes is kind of like, it's your body doesn't, it's physiological. Your body doesn't care if you're 10. Like, that's not your goal. Your goal is to have a baby. And in between, you just keep doing the things you were doing. So, you are not like, can I be 10 so I can push? Can I be 10 so I can push? Because that's just a mild post. That's not the goal. And actually, best to just let pressure build as much as possible until you have that irresistible urge to push. And if you are not sure if you have it, it's not.
Right.
If you have to go like, is this it? It's not.
Right. Right.
Because there is like, and it's not just because we're being like, oh, so you don't push so long. It's because baby's head needs to be completely freed from the lower uterine section so that it can rotate, because it comes in, the top of the pelvis is wider front to back or side to side. So it comes in from the side and baby's head has to rotate and then extend. And it can't do that unless it's like really free from the uterus, not just the door open on the top of the head, but like, you know, moved up to the level of their neck. So yeah, that, I mean, that episode explains it a whole hour way in detail. But the gist of it is that is there is exhaustion and things are harder if you start pushing before those things have happened.
Yes. So true. And it's fascinating.
And you've lived it.
And I have lived it, and I do wonder, you know, if I had been able to just relax myself and just wait for the urge, how things would have been different, you know, if she would have been born sooner or even later, but maybe I would have been more, mentally and physically equipped, to do a more effective job pushing, but, you know, maybe next time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, this is a very much of like the traditional way people push and how classes are taught and what is done in the hospital and like, and what midwives know, like this is how, and we're starting to rethink it, but this is how we've known. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that it's a radical shift to think you don't have to push unless you want to. But yeah, I appreciate it because then there's less forces in your body, so there's less damage in terms of later pelvic health care. But also because I think, look, birth is not linear, and that rest and be thankful phase has a purpose aside from baby rotating, and you know, it has a purpose, I think, for the mom as well to catch up, to get that rest, to have that space where to integrate all these thoughts that you were having of like, I have to push now, and you know, that means I'm gonna be a mom, and baby, what? Right? That freak out moment. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that would have been nice to have. But next time.
Yeah, cool. So, Vanessa, what? I think we know, but what was the hardest part of this whole story, or of this whole experience?
Yeah, I think it's what you think. The pushing stage was just really hard. And, you know, there were a couple moments postpartum. I loved also the episode you did on postpartum stories just recently. I think that's so important to to share those as well as birth stories, because when you're preparing for birth, you're so in birth world, and then you have a baby, and then it's like, okay, now I get to learn how to do this next part, but it's trial by fire, you know, you're in it. And so, you know, there were some challenging pieces to that too, but overall, I think where I really met my limits and had to surpass them, even when I didn't think I could, was definitely that the pushing that was just really hard.
Mm. And you, I love how you know, when met with that challenge, you dug deep and deeper and surpassed what you thought you could do to get your baby out.
Yeah. Yeah, not something that I thought that I would be able to do if you had told me beforehand. So that was, it was just a really cool way to become a mom.
Yeah. And thank you for reading that passage from your story, because that was beautiful. So, and also makes me want to ask you, when did you write your story, and what did you find a value in writing it?
I actually wrote my story within a week after she was born. I think it was just a few days after. And I remember writing it, you know, here and there in fits and starts when she was sleeping on my chest, in those days right after she was born. We did kind of a baby moon where it was just my husband and I and our daughter. My mom, who lives in town, got to meet her, you know, the day she was born. But other than that, we just spent a week, just the three of us, just getting to know each other. And so I had a lot of time to sort of process, and in light of who she was, you know, sort of look back on the birth through that lens, you know, with her right there, right close to me, as I sort of just put things together and, you know, asked my husband, like, well, do you remember this part and what happened first? And, I don't know that I would have been able to remember so many of the details if I hadn't written it right away. But at the same time, the details aren't entirely what matters the most. And, you know, the feelings of it definitely have stuck around for, you know, will probably stick around for the rest of my life. So, you know, I'm glad I wrote it early, but I think maybe it would have been a different story with time. But it's, yeah, I'm still glad that I wrote it in those first couple of days, because I had the time to, you know, she's my only child. So, so it was a nice way to spend that time, just getting to know her and reflecting on the experience.
Yeah, sounds like it. And we do need to, like, give this a big experience. It needs a time to be processed, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was the most wonderful part of this?
The most wonderful part. Definitely, I mean, meeting my daughter. That, you know, that's the obvious answer. But I think also, you know, because I had been close to 42 weeks and close to that, you know, ticking clock of, okay, well, we have to go to the hospital now. And, you know, I have been in one way or another sort of planning a home birth for almost a decade, because I've been interested in birth for so long and interested in physiologic birth for so long. And the fact that I actually got to have that and got to have it at home and all that, I mean, that was really, that was really a wonderful bonus, you know, at this point. It, you know, of course, you know, having a safe birth, healthy baby, healthy mama, is so important. But the fact that I sort of got to do it on my terms in the end, when so much of birth is so unpredictable, that was a really wonderful part too.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did it transform you?
I think just the fact that we can do hard things, even when you don't think you can. And I've noticed, you know, as my daughter has gotten older, and in those moments when you're, you know, taking care of your baby and you just, you know, it's just a hard phase and you just don't feel like you can handle whatever challenge is going on for one more day. And then you do, partially because there's no other option, but partially just because, you know, you love your child and you do what's best for them. I think that capacity in myself was kind of born during labor. You know, that just that whole, I can't do it, but you do it anyway. And realizing that that's a strength that I have, and that, you know, all mamas have, to really dig deep, just out of love for your kid.
It's so true. It is so true. And they take you, like birth and kids just take you right to your edge.
They do take you right to your edge. They know where that edge is. Somehow they just know it.
Right? Yeah. Because it's not like you had a beautiful textbook on your own terms birth, but that doesn't, there's not a birth without taking you to your edge.
Right.
Right. And I find that somebody might say, well, if you have like a straight C-section where it's scheduled and you don't experience labor, or you have an epidural from right away, and I find that in those cases, it's not quite, like, it is a birth, but you're not necessarily tapping into that, I can't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, which serves you as a parent so much. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to learn it later. Like, if you weren't taken to your edge during birth, parenting is going to take you to your edge. Is my point.
Oh, absolutely.
That was like a long way to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so there's, I appreciate the monumental event that signifies the being taken to your edge, that people and you and everybody can recognize more than the amorphous postpartum taking to your edge, if it doesn't come.
Yeah, it's sort of like a ceremony in a way.
Yeah.
It's like induction into motherhood by, you know, a certain moment, which is really cool and also really hard.
Yeah. And doable. We do.
And doable. Yeah.
And then you get to do it. Like, come face to face with the universe in an instant.
Yeah.
This is awesome. I'm just enjoying your story so much. What is something you want the listeners to know?
I listen to your intuition, listen to your gut. And that goes for parenthood too. You know, I think something that I've discovered in, you know, just these few months of parenthood, not that I'm some paragon of knowledge, but I think I've realized that, like, you know your baby better than Google does, which is really hard in our culture of, like, I don't know the answer, let me look it up. It's really different as a parent, I have found, which shouldn't be shocking, but there it is. And I think the same goes for, you know, when you're thinking about what you want out of your birth, like, trust your intuition. You can't always know the answer, and you can't always know what's going to happen. But if you have a really strong sense about something, don't ignore that.
Mm. Absolutely. And also, that you know your baby better than Google does is going to go on a t-shirt somewhere.
I think it should. I really think it should. I think, you know, as much as, like, you know, sometimes we get carried away in preparing for birth and don't prepare for parenthood, I sort of feel like, in a way, that was good, because it, at least, you know, for me, because I kind of had to rely on intuition for, you know, those first months, especially because I hadn't really done a whole lot of preparing. And of course, you know, I knew basic baby care from past experiences. But when it comes to making decisions about, you know, how you're going to parent, doing it, you know, sort of by the seat of my pants, I found was just a lot more effective and a lot less challenging and a lot smoother when I just sort of listen to myself, as opposed to what the internet has to say.
Yeah. Well, and now you also laid a groundwork of introspection and observation that not a lot of people do, in terms of having that week of just getting to know and meet your child and meet your guys as a family. And like, that sounds like not much, but it is immense in terms of starting out parenting right.
Oh, it really was. And if you're able to do it, I would so advocate for that. Just even if it's a day, or, you know, even if it's 12 hours, like, if, and it's hard, I know, when you have other kids and other commitments and, you know, maybe not so much other kids. If I think this is especially beneficial for first-time moms, but every baby's different, you know? And so finding a way, regardless of your circumstances, to carve out that time, oh my goodness, I'm so glad we did. I think you're right. I think it's just so it's a really nice way to be able to process and get to know each other.
Mm-hmm. And I find that the second time moms and third time, like when I go to postpartums for repeat clients, even though they have other kids, they are better at understanding that they need to figure out how to carve that time out.
That's interesting. That's interesting. It makes a lot of sense.
And even if it's like, it doesn't, you can't just like the three of you cocoon, right? Like with your newborn, but it includes your older child. And sometimes that includes a lot of screen babysitting, whatever. Or the kid going off with grandparents or something. But understanding that somehow that you need to give yourself more time.
Right. Right. And your family as a whole is brand new, even for the other kids, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So, always beneficial.
Yeah. Any name, and I know we have links for the show notes on this. Oh, there goes my sump bump.
Hooray!
Yay! It's like, of course, now is the time you're going to choose to do this.
Of course.
There's links that you sent me and a bunch of great resources that I'm going to post on the show notes. But to those who are only listening, can you give like what's your top things for that you would recommend?
So I loved that book I mentioned, Mindful Birthing. That was really a fantastic resource and, you know, a way of preparing for labor and even parenthood. There's a lot of stuff in there about, you know, using mindfulness in those early days of parenthood, which is and even the later days of parenthood, which is, I think, I have found to be more invaluable than I ever knew at that time. So that's a great book. Of course, all the Ina May. I read Birthing from Within, which certain pieces of that were really helpful. Let's see, what else? Sarah Buckley's Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering is great. And, oh, I think I also sent you, you know, these aren't birth resources, but the books, The Womanly Art of Breastfeeding and Sweet Sleep by La Leche League. I wish that I had found both of those before my daughter was born because they're great. And, you know, there's a variety of meditation apps. I tried to do a little meditation every morning, especially in the third trimester, which I think was really helpful, even just to release some stress. There's so many resources.
And
those
the
were
podcast.
Especially great. Yes, and oh my goodness, your podcast is so amazing.
I can't wait.
No, you shouldn't be kidding. It's such an amazing resource for so many different topics. You cover so much and you talk to so many amazing birth professionals. Everybody should listen to it whether they're pregnant or not.
Thank you. And you know what? It makes my life easier because when I'm talking to clients and I'm like, there's this, listen to this one and listen to this one and listen to this one. Like I can point people to stuff that I know is good.
Yeah. It's very efficient.
Yeah. It's cool. Thank you so, so much, Vanessa, for sharing your story and just for, you know, yeah, all the wonderful things. I'm looking forward to your kids growing and you being more active as a childbirth educator because I think your community is going to be very well served.
Thank you so much. That's so kind of you to say. And it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Mighty Ones, check out the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can see pictures of Vanessa and her baby and her birth. And you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Sibirsky. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me Wednesday when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening.